So it's my very great pleasure to welcome for the first time to the Thursdays at Many Rivers series local Sebastopol author Nina Tepedino. She has a couple of books here that you'll see, and I know she's going to be talking about and reading from. So please join me in welcoming Nina Tepedino.
Thank you very much.
I decided that it might be quite appropriate to just begin tonight with 1 minute of some meditative sort of silence. Maybe to express silently your own private concerns or intentions, or your own concerns in a global sense, and also to somehow be cognizant of what it must be like to be a flooding victim in our country at this time. And so while you go away for a minute, I'll play my flute. Thank you. I don't know if there's a special mantra for hurricanes. I would like to do something that I've really never done before, because as a self-published author and a member of Redwood Writers, we're always put on a 5-minute time limit, and we have to share with a lot of other people. And tonight is a very luxurious time for me to share my books with you. So it's kind of exciting, actually. But I came up with the idea that I'd like, you may have to share a little bit, but I wanted you to have the book in your hands and follow along with me and enjoy seeing what's in it, because there's so much in this book. And I thought, let's try it. And you could also share, if you wish, with someone else.
Thank you.
Ellen and,
okay, we can
and
share.
Lilith can share.
Sure.
Hello.
Hi.
Nice to have you. And you've actually read the book, haven't you? Have you read the book?
No,
I think you have, but you used. And I have more. I have more books.
I have more books.
Will you sign it?
Later.
Yes. And this is not to pressure you, of course, to buy the book you're holding on to, but I just thought it would be an interesting kind of teaching way to try with the book. I always like to introduce how the cover happened. This is me at the age of 5 on Lake Ontario Beach outside of Rochester, New York, where my mother's mother lived. And we used to visit there often. All that was saved from 1938 from our old Kodak camera was this little print. They were very small then,
They were about, 2 by 3 inches. And it even had one corner ripped off. And my mother gave it to me a few years ago, around the year 2000, something like that. And I always knew it had a special future, this photograph. And then I saw Michael Finnegan's book called Barbarian Days, and he used a photograph with the white lettering, and I really liked what he had done for the cover. So that's the story behind this. And a few years ago I showed this photograph to a bunch of kids, and I was teaching and subbing here in Sonoma County, and at first they couldn't believe that that was me at 5, because they were 5. And so I said, yes, and I'm still this person. I'm still this person. On the Enneagram scale, I'm a 7, which is called the joy. And this is me. I'm still this crazy, you know, out there enjoying myself me. So we can open the book, and when you have a book designer, you get to help. When you self-publish, you actually get to do more. You don't have so many people to pass through your ideas. So there's the table of contents, which we will get back to. As you can see, there's 6 chapter essays, and I'm going to sort of have fun this evening just briefly opening those chapters for you so that you kind of have some sense. I probably should say the book is a bit of a memoir, maybe not a bit, but a lot of a memoir, because I needed to use memoir to give you as an explanation for why I believe what I believe about health and about well-being. It has a lot to do with my life and what I have learned and what I have experienced. Most of the time, I think we skip over a dedication of a book, but dedication can be very important. Because I wanted to thank the past generations, my grandparents, my parents, my teachers. And then I wanted to honor present and future generations, my sons and their families, my grand and great-grandchildren, my sisters' families, my elder peers and their wisdom, and my friends who believe in me. Both my sisters have passed over, and their children view me as a very special auntie, and I consider I'm the last person left in my original biological family, which is an interesting condition. You don't really ever get used to that. It's something that I didn't realize. Don't we go through lots of things that we just didn't realize, and we don't know what they're going to feel like. So I decided to use a poem, a little piece of Lao Tzu. I have a son who really loves Lao Tzu. And I thought this was rather important, and I thought maybe you might even like to read it out loud with me. You're welcome to do that if you... Don't accept the modern myths of aging. You are not declining. You are not fading away into uselessness. You are a sage a river at its deepest and most nourishing. Sit by a river bank sometime and watch attentively to the river as the river tells you of your life. The Chinese characters, I forget what the word is called when you do that on a page, art-wise, but that stands for health. I once had somebody ask me, "You're sure?" I said, "Yes, I'm very sure." So there's a bit of an introduction, and probably the main purpose of my introduction is to quickly give a rationale for why this book came to be. And one of my favorite parts is on page 2, where I describe in my late 30s, I began to give up the standard American diet. I began to listen, to read, and attend workshops and lectures. I became informed by Dr. John Christopher, naturopath and herbalist from Provo, Utah, who used to travel widely for holding natural healing seminars. In 1975, I met Rosemary Gladstar, proprietor of Traditional Medicinals Company in Guerneville. It's now in Grayton on
Ross Road. And in Sonoma Mountain Village.
Yeah.
They did.
I can't begin to tell you what a revelation it was. I moved to Sebastopol in 1975 after Skye was born. So that, and I met her quite soon. And she now lives in Vermont. And she left this area. But we are still communicating. And she has wonderful books on natural healing. She doesn't use anything but plants to heal. And then the introduction really goes on a little bit farther in my work here in Sonoma County, especially when I worked on the GE Free campaign and got to be Percy Smizer. And who happened to stay at your home. Beth, this is kind of interesting.
Didn't he eventually win his suit against Monsanto?
He won.
Yes. I called him one night at midnight because I was on the committee. And Daniel Solnit was our chairman. And he couldn't believe what I had done. He thought it was marvelous. But I called him at midnight because he lives in Canada. And I asked him to come and help us win this campaign. And he said yes.
Yay.
So it was very easy. And we had other wonderful people at that time. And if you want to leave through the book, it's okay, you can do whatever you want with the book, but it's the resources are for every chapter. And I worked very hard on that so that you'd know that how much I was helped and instructed by very wonderful experts. Okay, chapter 1 is called Birthing, From Dark Age to New Age. And since I'm a woman, and I don't think a lot of women have described what their birthing experiences in the 50s were like. I certainly was extremely naive and not ready at the age of 22, 23, and then on to 24 and almost 25. I was shocked by what they now call the medicalization of birthing. It wasn't I went to the Maternity Center Association training in New York City, and fortunately it was New York City, and it was New York College of Medicine. But because of that experience, I haven't liked hospitals ever since. And I'm also very suspicious of doctors. But I think the labor nurse was like an angel. Mm-hmm. And she's the only person I had with me. A lot of people don't realize that we had to be alone. The hospitals didn't allow us to have any family for the birth of your child. Not in the room, and not in the so-called delivery space, this part. So it was my first experience with Western medicine and the way it's done and so forth. And so this describes the whole thing. And I gave this to women to read before the book was published and put together. And many of them said they would not change one word of it. And I tackled the whole subject of circumcision as well. And it's all, again, another subject that people just don't write about or talk about enough. And another person, after she read it, she said, "I am so glad it had a happy ending." Because as you can probably already guess, the birth of my third son was not in a hospital. 16 years later, he was born. Skye was born in a little cottage in Inverness, California. And that's a very interesting part of the chapter. And I won't... I'll read the last paragraph on page 16, but I think you will really enjoy reading what it was like, my birthing experience was like 16 years later. And Dr. Le Boyer had done something quite important from France. He indicted the delivery procedures and what it's like for labor and the chemicals and everything that was used. And he promoted no lights, very dim, warm, not cold, and a whole just total opposite of what the birthing experience was in hospitals, even as late as 1975. And so I also go into the book's resources in the back for that chapter, tell you about Ina May Gaskin, who eventually helped to put together the farm in Tennessee. She went with her husband, Steve Gaskin, and they went on buses. I wanted to go so badly. But she totally revolutionized birthing. And her book is called Spiritual Midwifery. And there's other wonderful books that we were all reading at that time that changed our minds and taught us the way what we're supposed to have when a child is to be born. I had always wondered about the loud belly laugh that came from Skye that first night. Just recently, I learned the answer. The Navajos believe that when a newborn infant laughs during his first night of sleep, or her first night of sleep, it means he or she is leaving the spirit world to re-enter the real world. Aha, now we all know, and so does Sky. That's just a little tidbit. Chapter 2 is Foods and Diets. As you all know, we've been introduced to a lot of different diets in the last couple of decades, and it's been unusual since the 60s, not unusual, to be inundated with a myriad of diets and food choices for health, well-being, and spirituality. The array of options have included organic, mucusless, vegan, lacto-ova-vegetarian, macrobiotic, vegetarian, plus fish, non-gluten, paleo, anti-inflammatory, which is very important, by the way, raw foods, liquids, juices, green drinks, fasting, Mediterranean, and I know I have missed one or two, at least. And how can I not mention the very recent kale craze? So, as I just said a few minutes ago, I abandoned the regular American diet when I was 36. And I look back, you know, those are the days when the school day was over, I took my two young sons and we went and had one of those big Whoppers at the Burger King. Yeah, we did. And so we gave up all that kind of stuff. And after we left Florida, we became vegetarians to kind of mirror our association with Swami Satchitananda at that time. And we became, I suppose, vegans because we ate tofu till it came out of our ears. And my two sons never want to have lentil soup ever again. But we cooked everything from scratch, and we cooked outside on a fire. Mm. And I learned I was a good vegetarian cook, and I love to cook. But I had a male partner and two teenage sons to feed at that time. So that whole story is in chapter two, when we went back to the land in Maine, and it totally influenced the whole rest of my life, that experience. Sometimes when I have a group of people that I can actually share my book with, it's very exciting, and I almost don't know what to share next. It's a wonderful experience, so if I hadn't already said so, I'm so glad you all came this evening. So welcome. Chapter two is very anti-corporation. It's very anti-food that we did not make ourselves. And totally. It's been the cause, I think, of a lot of health problems in our country. Not to be eating, we should not be eating something that did not come from our own kitchen. You know what Michael Pollan says. He says, if you look at your plate and you notice if everything on that plate is what your grandmother would have eaten, it's okay. If your grandmother had eaten that plate. Well, I mean, in terms of research. Yeah.
My grandmother.
Not your
grandmother. I'm talking about macaroni and cheese. And
I never saw my grandmother eat. She was always cooking, my Italian grandmother. You know, really, really, I never saw her eat. It's kind of, she's in here too. She's a big, my grandma Tepidino is a very big character in chapter two. Very and everybody can understand why I have a chapter on feet. Free on the earth, the foundation for fitness. Mm. It's because I was put in high lace shoes as soon as I learned to walk. And I didn't learn to walk until I was 19 months old, and because I was kept in a playpen. And I think to this very day, it's why I'm such an itchy, besides being a Sagittarian, I love mobility. I love moving. And I hate closed shoes. And I discovered, you know, the era of Birkenstocks, and I moved to Florida and I walked on the beach for miles. Mm. And my foot size grew from 6 to 8.
Wow.
The feet, we know, are very, very important. And there's a very small part in chapter two about a very interesting woman. who wrote a wonderful book about feet and their connection with all of our organs, and which I'm sure many of you know about already, and vexology and the whole works. Dr. Christopher, years ago, used to make garlic poultices and to cure flu and other bad infections. And he would put it on the soles of your feet and put, I guess, cloth around that, and then you go to bed with all the stuff of it. And he said, when you wake up tomorrow morning, you will taste garlic in your mouth. And he was right. We did. I was so impressed. You know, the feet, so crucial for us. And to walk barefoot as much as possible. There's a really wonderful man who was living in Burbank Heights, who walked everywhere barefoot. And he had other health issues, I'm sad to say. And he just passed away 2 days ago. But he went everywhere in bare feet. And then I met a family one day here in Sebastopol, and they were allowing their children to walk all over in bare feet. And I complimented them, because they were getting this wonderful energy from the earth and using their feet and using their bodies. I guess when I first studied modern dance, I was already 18, and I discovered how much I love to dance in bare feet. So that's another reason why I had to have a chapter about feet. Because this book is a voice to teach people a better way to be. And chapter 4 is all about Tai Chi. I had never seen anywhere where this much was used to describe Tai Chi. It usually gets a really bad rap. They want to just say it's good for balance, but it's good for every single organ in your body. It's a form of self-acupuncture. I've been doing it for 44 years. I learned it way back in 1974 from a teacher who had come from China. See? But this is why I said, you don't know what's going to happen in your life. And I seem to know what to grab onto and not give up. Because there were lots of things coming at us then. Polarity, yoga, you name it. Come on, there's more. Reiki, running. There's that other thing where rebirthing. Oh, I mean, there was a huge number of physical and mental and emotional regimens that people were flocking to, to Esalen and
some meditation.
Yeah.
Zen meditation at Gringotts.
But I tried a lot of things, and I ended up choosing Tai Chi. It's very dancey. It's like a wonderful meditation and movement. And so before I do the last two chapters, quickly, you have to stand up, and I'm just going to give you a little Tai Chi to do. Just so you know how wonderful it feels if you don't already. There's very simple thing you can do. Just staying by your chair. Just lower your center of gravity. Knees, bend your knees, yes. And then let your arms stay there bent, and let your arms slowly come up about to your brow, which is different for everyone, and then bring it back, palms down, palms out and down to your side, and then stand straight. We'll do it once more. You can do it as much as 10 times if you wish. I don't suggest you do that the first time, 10 times, but... So, this is one of the things I teach in my classes. This is just a simple that was invented by... And then palms down. Yeah, very nice. And palms out. And then down to your side. Turn this way. I'll give you another one you can do just by your chair. You scoop, you have your arms, and you're going to scoop them like this, up and way and reach and come around. And cross hands. That reach, isn't that reach wonderful? They have it in Qigong too. This is a wonderful reach. And I forget, one day Jim was in one of my classes. Both Jim and Star learned Tai Chi with me. And one day I just said, up, more, more, more. Just go. So, thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
I'm going to take a little sip.
I'm just having an allergic reaction.
That's another thing. I just realized tonight, I think my eyes are improving, actually. I have wonderful eyesight. That's another lovely byproduct of eating well, eating organic, eating... But I think I'll put them on for just a little while. These are just little reading glasses, the cheapy ones. Chapter 5 is called Healing the Natural Way. And I say on page 58, I'm hesitant to jump into this area of my health wisdom teaching. I do so with caution and empathy for my peers. I extend an apology for my provocative and radical views regarding Western medical practices, which I do not trust. I don't have a medical or nursing degree or an herbal healing certificate. I do have an experience that spans over 60 years with a strong belief in natural healing, scholarship, workshops, and research. I proudly share my personal health and well-being history as a teaching example and prescription for taking charge of your own health and wellness. I have a deep allegiance to a regimen of preventative medicine that honors naturopathic physicians, herbal preparations, homeopathy, acupuncture, chiropractic, botanicals, and body/spirit practices like Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, meridian tapping, Reiki, massage, hot spring soaking, Ayurvedic medicine, sound healing. I'm going to stop at sound healing. I realize since I finished this book, almost every week I learn about something else. I learn about something new, and not bad either. Good stuff. They're now using ultrasound to cure cancer. And I have a very long time Qigong teacher who contracted prostate cancer, and it has been cured with ultrasound, which you can get in San Francisco, a special San Francisco hospital. So I don't know that much about it. I've
So anyway, I just throw that in there. Where was I? Reflexology, iridology. I always remember my first eye reading. He was a man from China, and he read my eyes. He could tell everything about you in your eye. There's lines, and they're almost like little magicians, and they look at your eyes, and so it was fascinating to me. I guess I was pretty much hooked. I kind of like soaked up everything in those days. Aromatherapy, Bach flower remedies, and tinctures, astrology, walking, swimming, and diets that heal and nourish, not that break down or poison. Let food be our medicine is a fine motto and habit to live by and live for. Sorry. So I just go on, and sometimes over the years.
Why don't you read that line below that where it says, the last line, when did you stop dancing?
The which? The last line?
Yeah.
Oh, the
if
four questions?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When did you stop dancing? When did you stop singing? When did you stop being enchanted by stories? When did you stop being comforted by the sweet territory of silence? Yeah, that's from Gabriel Roth's in his book, Evolver, Social Movement. That's a wonderful quote of his. I also was pretty brave when I wrote this book. I think there are people in this book that I didn't get their permission, but I gave them quotes. I decided they'd be very happy to be in my book. Dr. Ricalda won't mind. Dr. Andrew Weil will be very happy about this. And I've learned a lot from those two guys, really. They're amazing, and I read their stuff every morning. Oh, the other part that Lilith and others of you will probably enjoy, about the singing and the dancing and when your well-being seems to be in jeopardy. I hope you do dance, sing, and listen to stories and tolerate some silence in your daily life. Listening to your body messages is essential when you are not feeling well. If your body is full of drugs and medications, it will be more difficult for your body to send warnings or happy memos like, wow, you just made the right choice. How did you know I needed that healing plant, exercise, food? It may seem to some of you an intuitive dream or myth that a body has a language, but I believe it does. Also, your brain hears what you say out loud. Be careful about what you predict, describe, or consider. Watch what you say internally. Your brain is listening. You must brainwash it to know only healing and well-being wisdom. It does not need to hear predictions, time frames, or negative thoughts. Only wish the best for yourself.
Beautiful.
So, this chapter, page 61, I totally rush right into the whole chemical medications, whole pharma, and these, how much the dangerous drug cocktails are the outcome of unhealthy relationships between Big Pharma and the doctors that are supposed to keep us healthy. And Big Pharma is America's new mafia. I'm convinced that current medical practices are causing extreme side effects, and yes, even premature death among our elder population. In my community where I live, I have witnessed a dramatic increase in ailments caused by medications. The effects are manifested in various ways. And I realize, you know, I have a very close friend for 12 years, a male friend, who I didn't know, but he had been taking Lipitor for a number of years, and I totally quickly got him off it. It didn't take me long to convince him when I told him that it was really going to affect his memory. Statins might very well be what's causing onset of Alzheimer's in this country. Millions of people are on statins. That's because they treat doctors like they're holy people and they must do everything they say. You must not do everything they say. So this book, this chapter is pretty provocative in the sense that not everybody agrees with a lot of this. I happen to believe that you don't even have to have cataracts. People look at me like I'm sort of crazy, because they're actually caused by dark glasses. And you see people all the time with dark glasses, because what's happening? You're not giving your eyes a chance to exercise. The eye needs a certain amount of the UV rays to be healthy. But I learned that years ago from this really unusual person in Berkeley. And you would consider him probably unusual too, but he was quite smart. He knew a lot about eyes and what it takes to keep them healthy. The dangers of vaccine, boy, that's a whole subject. I get in hot water a lot about that one, because the last vaccine I had was in 1965. I haven't had one since. I took it for flu. My school district made it mandatory for us to have the flu vaccine. And then I moved to, and I was in Scarsdale, New York, and then I moved to Florida. And when I got to Florida, I got the worst case of the flu that you can imagine. I thought I was going to die. I was really sick. So no more vaccines for me. No more vaccines. They're also very dangerous. Most vaccines have preservatives in them. One of the main ones is thimerosal, which is very high in mercury. And mercury also is a neurotoxin. And it could very well be the cause for a huge, huge increase in autism in our country. We give many, many more vaccines to young children and infants at one time than many countries in the world do. And I understand it's a theory. It's not been proven, but I still think it could very likely be very responsible for the number. I worked in sites with children for special needs, and I've seen young families and the diets that they have also. And you can totally change them over to using unpolluted water and in their homes. And so anyway, it's just on and on. It's rather a daunting subject, isn't it? It's huge. And then page 75, I go into all the GMO stuff, glyphosate, genetic engineering, the dangerous threat to our food sources worldwide, Roundup Ready, glyphosate, still no efforts to ban it. Still hasn't happened. Still being used even around schools. And there's wonderful books in the resources for chapter 5 of people who have written about, done a lot of writing about the whole subject. Ty Bollinger, even Atul Gawande talks about it and being mortal. And wow, that's a big subject to talk about. Very influenced by that book, by the way. If you haven't read it, I really advise you to read that book. It's called Being Mortal. And there's another book by Dr. William Thomas called A Life Worth Living, which is revolutionizing palliative sites and nursing homes and rehab facilities for the elderly. For anyone who has to go, they should eat organic food. There should be no chemicals used in the cleaning of these places. They should have plants and animals and birds and gardens to garden in. Wonderful story in Atul Gawande's book, or Thomas's book, where they brought in the birds and they brought in the animals and the cats. And they made all the changes, and some of the residents were actually getting up out of their wheelchairs and walking around and helping. People were coming out of their rooms that had never come out of their room before, and they were involved. They had something to care for. They had something. That's a really wonderful subject, by the way. A lot of people are, and there's a lot of, and there's a big section in chapter 5 on chemotherapy. That's a very controversial subject, but it's beginning to change. There's more and more doctors who are realizing that chemotherapy did not heal cancer. Maybe in, there's a small percentage, maybe it did happen, but that's very connected with that person's immune system. But chemo basically does not kill the cancer cells, it only spreads them. And it's more and more doctors are realizing that there are better ways to heal cancer. Chapter 6, Our Poisoned Planet, huge subject. People have written large books about this subject. I can always remember Wendell Berry sitting on the stage with Gary Snyder, and for some reason they got on the subject. And Wendell Berry is telling us there are something like 93,000 pollutants now that are in our atmosphere. So I go through it all. Rachel Carson, aspartame. I attack the soda industry. Aspartame. I list the ingredients of these things, hoping people will not drink soda anymore. I talk about children at risk, very much at risk. Yesterday, the FDA finally banned something that they admit does cause leukemia in children. So that's, maybe we'll see more victories like that, more victories. Fortunately, Sonoma County decided not to do fluoridation of our water, and
You mean in Sebastopol? Sebastopol water is not fluoridated, but it is in many other places in the county. Well, so what, was this a county regulation or something that came up before the supervisors?
Yes, but they've never brought it up again. It's been, many people are changing it in parts of the United States. Europe, there's no fluoride in the water anywhere. So I list why, what's in, you know, what fluoride can do to your stomach, to your body, especially to a younger child. It's very, very, and so I'm against that.
There's still people in this county that
urgent
that
call.
Fluoride is it's good for dental stuff.
One of our supervisors.
An urgent call. And I want to just read the last part of 111, page 111. I once had the great privilege of spending time with Daniel Berrigan, the Jesuit activist in Berkeley and poet, who is very much against nuclear. I do mention anti-nuclear in my last chapter. Fukushima had happened before this book was published, so you can imagine I have very strong opinions about the dangers of that particular happening. And even back in 1981, Daniel Berrigan said to us, "We have two paths to choose from, the option for death or the option for life. Only the option for life is the answer for our world. I hope you will make the option for life your choice." This is also a very Sebastopol-y book. It starts off in Sebastopol. My first poem was written here in 1975. And since then, I've gone all over the United States, Bay Area, Pacific Northwest, I live there, and then the Southwest, Florida, and then I came back to Sonoma County in 2003. And I'm sort of in and out still, but I can't seem to get away from Sebastopol. And I chose, in my later poems, I chose two to end our evening with. That I thought were appropriate for tonight. Actually, I chose one from my Pacific Northwest days, which is where I did experience flooding. It's called Flowers and Floods. No flowers under the flood water, lives shattered, stranded, rescued, and revived. Sandbags filled, passed, and placed to hold back the rising rivers. It stops raining. Soaked ground births first shoots. I couldn't wait. I needed flowers. Flowers forced for sale. Sunrise cactus, purple tulips, yellow daffodils. Full arms carry colors into my house. Cut companions flood my senses with joy. Keep my life from drowning. Then one night in Santa Rosa, I was standing on my balcony on a very cold full moon in January. Out on my dark balcony, I decided to talk to Grandmother Moon. She answered me, "I am the eye to watch the world." I said, "What do you see?" "I see a planet that is aging, tired from abuse and raping of her lands. I see the polluted ocean waters struggling to survive. I am the ruler of the tides that could sweep and flood your coastal shores." So the eye of the moon is watching. The eyes of the world are watching. Grandmother Ancestor knows all. Listen, listen if you can. The beat of the drum, the chants in the mountains, flowers waiting to bloom. The cold moonlight reaches me. It enters into my bones, my breath, my veins. The message is imprinted. Another cycle begins with pure seeds for planting, the wind's soft power, and grandfather's sun to light the way.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yay.
So thank you so much, and thank you all for coming tonight. Many of you know the drill. We have a donation bowl over there. We share the donation, half the donations thus tendered with our speakers, and retain the rest to maintain this space for further such events. Ina also has a some kind of a sign-up sheet over here, right here on the counter. I'm going to put a pen there. People can add their names and emails. And once again, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.